Iowa football is near and dear to my heart, just as it is for so many people across this great nation. In my time since being a part of the Iowa community, I've had the chance to meet and get to know so many great men that have worn the black and gold and share in my love for this team. The fact of the matter is that I bleed black and gold, and I'm bringing to you the stories of the men that have the same blood coursing through their veins. I'm Colin Cole, and this is Legends of Kinnick. Welcome back, Hawk fans, to another episode of Legends of Kinnick. I am your host, Colin Cole, and I am here today with another great, amazing guest that have donned the black and gold, just like all of my guests that have been a part of the show so far. Today is no different. Another legend in his own right. My guest today came to Iowa from Romulus, Michigan, where he played high school football at Romulus High School. My guest rushed for more than 5,000 yards and 85 touchdowns in his career with the Eagles. After leaving high school, my guest attended Milford Academy in Connecticut for a semester. He then committed to Iowa Hawkeyes in early 2000 after visits with LSU and in-state powers Michigan and Michigan State. He would later say it was the consistency to which coaches Kenny O'Keefe and Kirk Ferentz persisted, which is why he decided on Iowa. He first made his debut in limited action in 2001, mostly on special teams and limited action running back, but when he took over the full-time starting job, his impact was immediate. He rushed for 1,264 yards and 9 touchdowns in the 2002 campaign after having only 220 carries during that season, on his way to being named first-team All-Conference and the Hawks' co-Big Ten championship season. In 2003, my guest would again see that running back position for the Hawks to it and lead them to a 10-3 record and go on to defeat the number 8 ranked Florida Gators in the Outback Bowl. Russell rushed for 1,355 yards and 7 touchdowns on 282 carries during that 2003 season. He was selected by both the coaches and media as a second team running back for the All-Conference team in 2004 Outback Bowl. Fred Russell's final game as an Iowa Hawkeye, he rushed for 150 yards, scored a touchdown, and was named the game's most valuable player in a 37-17 victory over that same Florida Gator team. A few weeks later, he was also named the most valuable player in the 2004 Hula Bowl. Ladies and gentlemen, the incomparable Fred Russell.
What's going on, man?
Hey, Fred, man. Thank you for joining me. Thanks for joining the show, brother. I appreciate you taking the time, man.
I'm proud of you, man. People don't know we live together in the Blue House in Melrose. There's about 8 of us in that house.
That's right. About 8 of us in that house. Hey, some of us had beds, some of us had the floor, but we made it through that summer, that's for sure.
Air mattresses.
That's funny.
Walk to that snake, Big C.
The infamous snake. You know what, man? I just leave it at that. He never left Iowa City, as far as I could tell, man. I leave it at that. He never left Iowa City. That guy, he made his own way. However, he did so. So, man, thanks for joining me, Fred. Man, let's talk a little bit about your journey as a Hawkeye, man, and what it was that was the deciding factor to decide on the University of Iowa. I mean, you had some opportunities coming out of Romulus. You made a brief stop in Connecticut, you know, in the prep school, but then you had your pick of the litter in major D1 schools. So why Iowa?
Oh, man. Coming out of high school, man, I didn't know nothing outside the Detroit area. I committed to Michigan, didn't take no visits to no other schools, man. Had a little girlfriend, you know how that go. You didn't want to go too far from the high school kitty love, you know? And Michigan was, 30 minutes from the crib. And they just had won a national title. Mm. And I had my mind set on there. But failed on my ACTs, my SATs. Went to prep school. Kind of had my mind set on going back to Michigan, but I was finally out of the Detroit area. And that was like my first time living somewhere else, being out in Connecticut for that semester. And as I started to take my visits, Iowa was like my first visit, and I didn't really think nothing of Iowa, man. Real talk. Only thing I knew about the Hawkeyes was Tim DeWitt, Tavian Banks with the blind hair. Mm-hmm. They gave a Michigan a run for their money back in 97. Mm-hmm. And never thought I would be in that culture of Iowa City and in the state of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And once I took my visit, first person I seen was Fred Barr. And like I said, we spoke a little bit about Fred. I want to dedicate this interview to Fred Barr and his health situation and the GoFundMe page he does have with his health condition. And he did a real good job from being a host and persuading me that it was going to be a good brotherhood and something special that was going to come about being a Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, you speak a little bit about Fred and being a host and that aspect of it, but speaking a little bit about what he's got going on, we'll get into that a little bit more at the end of the interview. But Fred Barr, a high school teammate of mine who, you know, I actually helped persuade me to come up to Iowa, honestly, because I'd actually taken four of my visits in high school, and the Hawkeyes had kind of fallen off the radar for me in the process, because they had gone through at one point leaving Coach Fry leaving the program and then hiring Kirk Ferentz. In the midst of that, I kind of fell off the radar a little bit, wasn't talking to them quite as much. And then
that record had to be something scary, because I looked at that record once.
Oh man, my freshman year.
That record was scary, man.
My freshman year wasn't nothing nice, but even before that, I didn't even know nothing about Iowa. I wasn't paying no real attention to the program outside of that. But then, you know, when Ron Aiken and Brett Bielema came to my high school, spoke to me, and then Fred actually brought me to the airport to take the visit. It was just kind of, you know, it felt like home. It felt like there was a brotherhood there, like you mentioned, with Fred as well. I mean, that was a big part of me making the decision to come to Iowa was Fred Barr in the first place. Speaking in that way, man, we share that in common. And share that that hope for you know, we'll get more into that as the interview goes on. But let's talk more about, you know, that decision, man. When you talk about going to these major Division I schools, you talk about LSU, Michigan State, Michigan. I mean, those are some powerhouses. But to choose Iowa, who had not had great records, like you mentioned, up until that point, what was that deciding factor? I mean, I know, you know, talking to Fred is one great thing, but what were some of the other aspects that were draws for you to decide to come up to Iowa?
Well, also it was like a 6.5-hour ride from my hometown. And it was a decision I had to really like make on my own. And it was pretty much a growing up in a rough environment. I matured a lot being in Connecticut because it humbled me seeing that guys that came out of high school the same year, me playing ball their freshman year. So as I'm in prep school, I'm watching. I'm just, you know, feasting at the mouth, wanting to show my talents at a Big Ten level or at the big stage and show mm-hmm. I can compete mm-hmm. with you guys, you know?
Yeah.
And Coach Fans, you know, he was the first face I seen with the recruiting trail. You know, at the time, Coach Fans, he was grinding, you know, to get the program going. My prep school coach talked me into meeting with Coach Ferentz. I really didn't want to meet with him. I mean, I seen a record. I was just like, nah. But as I started having to, you know, my parents, they didn't know nothing about football, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
I thought about what I would go back home to. Michigan, they were like, you know, you went there and you accomplished what you need to accomplish, but we won't want you to start school in August. So I had to really start thinking about type of crew of friends I grew up with, man. And it wasn't going to be nothing too friendly if I was sitting around them a couple of months.
Yeah.
From January all the way until what, August, September. Mm-hmm. No, August or, you know, the summer with Joe.
Yep.
I was at a basketball school too. So it was like me finding somebody to train with. It wasn't like the environment y'all had at Florida growing up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like y'all can go somewhere and be training with a bunch of guys coming back. It wasn't like that for me, man. It was me. Really, I had a bunch of basketball friends, and then I had a bunch of friends that was in the streets like that. So I felt like me starting school in Iowa that January, and then I was able to run track that first semester too. So I had did both track and football when I first got to Iowa. Mm-hmm. And just like I said, man, I clicked. Fred did a good job posting, man. That's at the end of the day, he was one of the go-to host guys. And met some of the guys, met you, met some of the other guys, Pun, stuff like that. And I was ready to roll. And, you know, Coach Ferentz and them had he had an open line of communication to me at that time. Like, if I needed any questions to ask him or Coach O'Keefe, they answered. And my prep school coach, he's kind of sold me, Coach Chaplin, I'm sorry, Milford Academy. Mm-hmm. We produced, that school also produced Sean Green.
Okay.
And a bunch of other, you know, a bunch of other top-rated Division I pipeline that school created.
Nice.
So, once it came to Iowa, it was a different culture. The coaches were persistent, and the fact that I just couldn't go back to Michigan, man. I couldn't.
So, when it came to, you know, obviously making that decision and how important that decision was for you, there are some obvious factors that played into that, man. But once you made the decision to come to Iowa and to be a part of that program, what was it like for you stepping onto that campus in that room of running backs and being a part of that program? What was it like for you trying to navigate that early part of your collegiate years?
I have to say it was different, man, because I had a lot on my plate. Managing school, managing track, managing the strength and conditioning program that Coach Doyle had for us, and just trying to learn my way around there. Dallas Clark was my roommate when I first got there.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of, you know, his focus rubbed off on me. And it was different, man. I didn't get to come in with a bunch of freshmen like you guys had. So I kind of had to wiggle my way through there on my own. And then on top of that, I was juggling with track and field. So it was a little different, man. I had to wiggle my way through that. And then with the competition of backs, you know, we were all lobbying. A lot of us lobbying, you know, just to, you know, get the carries Ladell Best wasn't good at the time. So that was a tough competition. That had to put my mentality to a whole different stratosphere that I had to even let go of track.
So, Fred, I guess I didn't do a great job of doing my due diligence because I should have. I remember the track briefly. I didn't do a thorough enough job of checking into that as much. So let's talk about that. Let's go into that a little bit. What was that like in terms of training for track and conversely doing it for football, training for football? What was your life like? I mean, it sounds like, I mean, you had more than a full plate. I mean, considering what we had to do as football players, obviously the academic side in and of itself is a difficult task to have to maintain, as well as trying to maintain some sort of social collegiate life. You're trying to still be a student at some point. But to add to that, the rigors of what we had to deal with, just like you talk about with Coach Doyle and strength staff, then you add the track side of it. Man, talk about how much that was, man, and how that helped mold you into being the player that you became as a Hawkeye football player.
I quickly learned that I had to get rid of the Sega and PlayStation players. That they had to sacrifice. It wasn't no more Madden football. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It wasn't no more juggling the school. And then Coach Doyle, you know, he was heavy on squatting and Olympic lifting. So I still don't know how, after, you know, doing that heavy squat and then stuff like that, I was still able to go over and go do some of the workouts with the track routine. I was able to make it to Big Tens, qualify for the 60 meters in the Big Ten at that time.
That's wild.
But Coach Doyle kind of looked at me and just told me, "Hey, man, this competition gonna be a tough competition with the other running backs you had, you know." And I had to really sit there and think about it, like, man, you know what? I'm gonna have to drop this track off, and I had to do some bonding, some social bonding with you guys too. So with track and coming in at that mid-year, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
It's interesting you say, I mean, because we talk about that stable of running backs. We talk about Ladell Betts leading out that group, obviously, being a four-year starter at that position. But then you got a guy like Aaron Griffin, who was his backup, a guy like yourself, Siakam Massaquoi, and even Robbie Crockett. So, I mean, you guys had a lot.
Oh, yeah, no, not to mention
Jeremy
don't
Allen.
Don't forget the freak.
Yeah, not to
don't
mention
forget
Jeremy
the freak.
Allen.
That freak. He was fullback. But yeah. We ain't talking about the freak that came in and Jamal Lewis that was squatting with you and Robbie Gallery.
Jay Skills was he was insane with the squats. But no, I'm talking about Jeremy Allen. Jeremy Allen was running back ability fullback. There was that a lot of times was in that one back sets and was getting a lot of those totes himself. So I mean, I have to share those carries around. I mean, you didn't get a lot of opportunities, but when you did get those opportunities, you took advantage of them.
Not at first, man. It was a tough battle, and that came out my sophomore year, because our freshman year we was like 3-5 that Alamo Bowl year.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Aaron Griffin separated himself from the pack.
Mm-hmm.
Our sophomore year. Mm-hmm. And then you still had Jamel coming about learning. Mm-hmm. And it was some dudes, man, that had to move positions. There was some dudes that quit, man, because you have to be really mentally tough to compete for when Ladell Betts was ready to leave or just, you know what I'm saying? It was tough, man. It was tough. You had to give your all every day. And with me being an undersized running back, I had to go a little bit more harder than other guys, because most coaches wasn't fine on giving a guy that was under 200 pounds passing him the keys to the run game like that.
Mm. So let's talk about that, man. We go into that 2002 season relatively unknown in the country. An unknown at the quarterback position, having just graduated, the senior running back who, like I said, had been a four-year starter at that position. Five guys up front that had seen some time together, but no real consistent time. Talk about going into that 2002 season, what the expectations were for yourself, for the team, and kind of what you thought would happen throughout that year.
What I thought, everybody had written me off, and I understood that, because Aaron was doing the thing, man. Let's be real with it. Aaron was, when Ladell needed that breather, Aaron was scoring first carry, second carry, third carry. When Ladell went down out of a bowl, Aaron was bowl MVP.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Most people don't understand that story behind that running back role. You know, everything else was pretty much set in stone in that 2002, going into that season, with the experienced offensive line, with the, you know, Brad stepping in, you know, so the receivers is pretty much new, you know, they kind of was stepped in. And when Aaron got hurt that spring, I that's when I did a lot of growth, because I had to start that spring. And we would pay attention to the media. I remember I seen the media guys, and I did a lot of talking to Coach O'Keefe and Coach Ferris. Like, hey, man, you know, I'm looking at this media guy, and they said that I thought it was supposed to be a smash at this number one spot. They were just like, oh, no, you know, that's just something we give to the media. So, you know, that summer, I did not go home. Like, when we were able to go home and stuff like that, I didn't go home. I was confident I did well that spring. I stepped my focus up. I studied the playbook, the film a lot more. I didn't have a veteran running back to teach me that. It was something I just had to do on my own. And after that spring, I just felt like things wasn't going to go my way. And I had to talk with my mother. And I was just like, I don't think it's going to fit here. After being in Ramos, being a four-year starter, and I'm just... You know, I'm just looking to step in right after Ladell, but Aaron had the leg up. And then you had, you know, like I say, on paper, you seeing what Jamel Lewis doing in that weight room, vertical, jumps, conditioning. We seeing some freakish stuff behind that man. Let's be real. Some freakish stuff going on with him, man.
No question.
So mentally, I had to dig deep. That summer. And, I thought about kind of leaving, and then my mother was like, look, are you a quitter? And then she said, she used the P word, are you a P? And I was like, no, ma. She was like, well, Go out there and show them how good you are. So, you know, went into training camp. I was listed at number two. And unfortunately, Aaron suffered a, you know, a leg, ankle injury. And that first game, I seen the, you know, we had them programs. Mm-hmm. And I was a little disappointed, man. You know, just in the competition-wise, competitive-wise, mm-hmm. me, Jermell, Aaron, we was, people don't know, it was a deep competition with us three. And then I seen that depth chart. It had Aaron at number one going into that first game. Aaron at number one, and it had me and Jermell slashed at number two. And I felt like it should have been a slash at the number one. And that's how, you know, I had a little chip on my shoulder going into that first game.
So that makes sense to me, man. It really speaks to what the competition was really about. I mean, again, to have a stable of guys, all of which have the capability of stepping in right away and making an impact in that position is huge. But for you, you're able to separate yourself. Obviously, with Aaron's leg injury holding him back some, it kind of puts him in a bad position. However, you got your opportunity and you took advantage of it. So take us back through that season, man, that 2002 season, how that competition kind of helped you and Jermell grow as well as Aaron, as long as he stayed a part of the team. We know that he left the team midway through the season, but how did that growth for you and Jermell throughout that season help push the team, and what games come to mind when you think back on that season?
The Penn State game. Going into the first 3 weeks, we still didn't have a clear-cut starter. Coach did not name me the official season starter until that Penn State game. And I have to say, first game, I thought, you know, I showed. The second game against Miami, Ohio, was a rugged game. I showed that I can carry a load. Mm-hmm. And then that third game against Iowa State, I was so determined just to make sure, you know, I could do what I could do physically. But I ended up hurt. You know, I think I was like over 100 yards that first half. And Aaron and Jermell, I just think at the time, wasn't in that rhythm. And I remember I cried after that. It was on my birthday. I had hurt my shoulder. I fought so hard mentally to get to where I got to. And it was tough. And then we had took a week off. And I guess we went against Kent State or something like that. Yes. Jermell stepped in, had over 100. I heard people don't understand. It was ruthless, man. We was battling. Mm-hmm. And then just Coach was like, you know, going into the Big Ten schedule, he was like, we're just going to ride it out with Fred. And at the time, I was like, dang, I couldn't lift my shoulder above my head. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to carry the load against Penn State that had three first-day guys on that D-line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But after that game, I gained a lot of confidence. That was a tough game. But I gained a lot of confidence. But it was easy, man, because I'm going to tell you, man, that O-line we had, you was in the trenches with them. Mm-hmm. Anybody could run behind that O-line. It was just what you can do at that second level. Mm. That's what it came down to, mm-hmm. what you can do at that second level. Because that first level, anybody can line up and, you know, get a guaranteed 5 to 6 yards because just that's how good our O-line was. Mm-hmm. It was just at that running back position. It's what you're going to do on that second level. And I just had to stay mentally tough, man, and stay at it. And, yeah, it raised me to a whole mental level and carried myself as a professional athlete. Is that, you know, Coach Doyle put a lot on us. The coaching staff put a lot on us. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, you know, when you went to that next level, a lot of coaches appreciated Iowa players because we came in with that professional mindset.
Yes. Yes. I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you with that. And, you know, that fourth game of that season was Utah State. I believe it was. Yeah, Utah State we played.
Utah State, yeah.
And I remember, yeah.
Jermell had a good game, you know?
Yep, he broke down the sideline for, I don't know, 70, 80 yards. I remember that. Right. I remember that.
We had a stable, man.
No question.
We had to really dig. I mean, to the point where later on that season, I don't think, you know, with the injuries and stuff like that, I don't think Aaron Graber could mentally keep up with that. You feel what I'm saying? Because we was pushing each other in that, man.
It was a lot, man. It was a lot. And it was a rigorous season. It was a tough season, yeah. Man. It was a lot of people don't even think about that. You think about some of those games we had, man, were some tough fought battles against the Purdue's early in the season. Like you said, that Penn State game. I mean, I remember that game, and I think back on that game, that was a double overtime game that we had to play, or an overtime mm-hmm. game that we had to play. And, you know, everybody was needed at every time, at every position.
Right.
And I remember, right. You know, I remember AG had a lot going on with that leg and some other things personally, so I know that was a tough time for him. But it was interesting to see both you and Jamel step in, and you know those times that you had that shoulder or had those injuries that were, you know, when it was too much, Jamel was able to step in and take the load fully, and it was good, and we were able to get through it, you know, with the play of the O-line and Brad, and obviously Dallas, as well as Mo and CJ, and you know we got to give all the props to everybody for picking up and stepping up the level of play. You know, there are no signs, man.
Yeah, it was deep, man. Like I said, it was. But I'm gonna tell you, that first Big Ten game, you felt the difference between from a MAC school to a Big Ten school. I'm mm-hmm. telling you, the first couple of carries, I had to ask myself, do you really want this? Hey, I'm serious.
yeah, there it is.
Hey, bro, don't bang at the Big Ten level, bro. They bang it, bro. Hey, when y'all used to fight in them trenches, man, I didn't want no parts of what was going on in them trenches, man.
Hey, man. Hey, Fred, I never saw any hesitation of you hitting that ball up in the inside them holes, man.
That was making sure I didn't get tackled by none of you big 300 pounders, man. Don't fear that.
That makes sense. That makes sense. That's why you was getting through those holes so quickly now then. All right, so you got a chance to be a part of that team. You know, it was a great ride. Obviously, we didn't end the season the way we wanted to. Going into that Orange Bowl game, a great start to the game. Obviously, we didn't finish it the way we wanted to. But fast forward to 2004, man, you have another, I should say 2003, excuse me. You have another amazing season, man. And that season defines more so than the 2002 season, who Fred Russell is, in my opinion, because it is a revamped offensive line. It's a new starting quarterback. It's new players everywhere. And yet you're still able to find a success within that season, rushing for more yards than you rushed for in 2002 season. So what was that like for you in that season as opposed to the year before, and how much more confident were you in yourself as well as as well as everybody around you?
I was a little nervous going into that season, man. Jamel had tore his ACL that spring. So it was kind of like I was a long ranger. Marcus Schnorr wasn't proven. So it was kind of like I had to change the way I carried myself that offseason. I really did. That was a different summer for me. I had to watch what I was eating. I had to kind of pace myself during that season because, like I said, Marcus Schnorr wasn't proven and Jamel wasn't coming back to that second half of the season. So it was challenging, man. It was challenging because I felt like I had a lot on my shoulders at that time with the running game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that I carried myself a certain type of way that off season to the point where, you know, coaches decided to name me a captain. I felt if I stayed healthy, we had a good chance of, you know, repeating a Big Ten chance. We just came up short on that, but we made it to a January bowl. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the coaching staff, man, Coach Doyle and Coach Ferentz and Coach Philbin, man, they did a good job of producing great offensive linemen. So it might not have had the sexiness of names with the revamp O-line, but we still had some good ones there where I felt confident around behind them guys.
Mm-hmm. So going into that season, obviously, like you said, there was some changes and revamped team, revamped O-line, a lot more on your shoulders. What stuck out to you? What game do you remember in that season that really summarizes the season for you? I mean, because you guys ended up in that 2004 Outback Bowl where you were the bowl game MVP. So what if that's not the game, what game do you most remember from that 2004 season of your senior season of college?
BC, I had to go with that game, man. You know, after we lost that Owl Bowl, we lost that Orange Bowl, man. And the preparation of that going into that Outback Bowl, going into that Orange Bowl was over all our heads, even the coaches' heads, you know? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they sent us home and, you know, we just was out of stride going into that Orange Bowl. But remember, it was like a funeral in that locker room. I will never forget that feel. You could just hear a pin drop. In that locker room, you can hear a pin drop on that bus ride back to the hotel. Yep. And it was just sad in that darkness. You just seen the fans out there with their colors on. It just felt like we let them down.
Yep.
And I just wanted to make sure I can do all in my power in that Orange Bowl not to have that feeling we had in that Outback Bowl. You know, and that's just O-line opened up big holes. Jamel was running. He was healthy at that time, a little bit more healthier. And it helped keep me fresh. People don't understand that 1-2 punch, man. It makes a big difference for that starting back, just because you're able to stay fresh and explosive. Mm-hmm. And that was my style, to stay explosive. I wasn't really a pounder. I had to kind of adjust my body and my running style to become a pounder all during that season until Jamel came back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had to really adjust my style. I had to really put myself in a mentality like I was 215 pounds.
Mm. So when we talk about that, man, what is the mentality of a 215 pounder as opposed to somebody who was under 200 pounds?
So to stand between them tackles, man, stand between them tackles and just being satisfied with the 4 or 5 yard carries instead of just looking for the big play. Mm-hmm. I'll say my junior year with me and Jamel going in that O-line, I was always looking for the big play because I knew once I went for 20 yards, I can come right out and we wouldn't miss a step with Jermaine. Therefore, when my senior year came, it was that you got to get back in there.
You know,
and I had to take a break on a play action. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a play action where I had to just give, you know, had to give just, you know, to give effort, but I had to, you know, I had to. Had to maintain it.
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, my junior year, I could just go hard. You know.
Yep.
It was the last thing you want to do. You don't want to see your teammates, man, with your head down, tears. I had to say that Iowa State game my junior year and that Orange Bowl really stuck out to me because I cried after the Iowa State game my junior year.
Mm.
Yeah.
I remember that game too. That was a tough one, but
people don't understand, man. My last high school game and the Iowa State game and the Orange Bowl game, I still have little nightmares from those, man. Yeah, man. In certain games, as you get older, you be like, damn, if I would have did this different, if that didn't happen. It's just certain games that stick out to you. And that Iowa State rivalry game, man, that sticks out. And like I said, the Orange Bowl, and I just didn't want to have them feeling, man, that feeling.
Yeah, those are some strong motivators right there. And considering how you came out in that 2003 season and surpassed your totals from the year before, because you had some huge runs in that 2002 season. But to come back in that 2003 season and have to endure and have to be a part, have to be that state, have to be that guy, you know, throughout that season and carry that load. I mean, that's a lot to have to do, man. But, you know, you were able to step up to the plate, man, and, you know, come out victorious for the team and help bring bowl victory back to the program. So those things are obviously some of the things that help, you know, us as ball players around the city, man. So in terms of just relationships and just hold your head much higher. So talk to us a little bit about what school's like for you, man, and going through the program and what it was like, what it's like when you go back to Iowa City now, thinking back on those times 20 years ago as to where we are now, and thinking back on your career as a Hawkeye.
Man, I have to say, I still have families out there that I go see that, you know, that was outside of family that I had besides with you guys. You know, sometimes we seen each other every day, man. Mm-hmm. You know, we got tired of seeing each other's faces sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, so I had a few families out in the Cedar Rapids area. Had the Cooper family, had the Rudd family, Winneke family, man. They just to get away from us sometimes, some weekends or some summers or something like that, just to change it up and get a family type vibe. Mm-hmm. It's humbling, you know, just going back, knowing I still have that love of family. And then just seeing you guys too, man. We just got a brotherly bond running into you guys when we go back, seeing some of the coaches that's still there, seeing their kids that was little kids eating with us at training table and how they grow. And just, you know, able to stick your head up and your chest out that we helped build something special. Mm-hmm. You know, we was that foundation, man. We was that foundation that helped get that program back to where it was at. From the, you know, the glory days. Mm-hmm. It's a great feeling, man.
No question. Not to mention, being a part of this program has offered us who have been a part of it from the beginning to be around those men and women who have made that program what it is, you know, over the last 20 some odd years, man, and even longer. Those that have devoted themselves to that program, man, it's a family atmosphere. There's no other college program that has what we have, you know, in totality. And to still be able to go back there and see the longest tenured head coach in college football and a lot of that staff still intact is good. Is amazing, really. It's like I said, unrivaled by any other institution in college. So,
and it was a blessing to have also like a coach like Coach Jackson, Coach Aiken, at the time that we had, to protect us from certain situations, you know, that's presently that came out out with the program. It just, you know, you sit there and think about, like, dang, man, a coach like Coach Aiken and Coach Jackson was like father figure. It was no nonsense. I thought, you know, people, y'all would see, you know, how Coach Jackson was on us, but when I seen how Coach Aiken was on y'all, woo!
No question.
They weren't for no games, Big C.
No, they were not. They were not.
And then if you want to talk about the psychological things, then you start thinking about the Marvin Sims, Fred Mims you can go talk to, man, that, you know, would keep it all away. You know, they would. People don't know on my visit, I went to go eat dinner with Fred Mims and his family, you know. Okay. And I could talk to him, too. Okay. And then Marvin, man. Go over on Melrose and talk to Marvin, man. Yeah. Marvin get you a sense of humor, man. And, you know.
And that's what I'm talking about right there. That would lead me directly into the next thing I want to ask you. I'm thinking about it as you're talking about those guys. I think back on my time there and what those relationships were like for me in terms of just needing those mentors in place. You know what I'm saying? I always kind of lean into that when I talk about my time there. Is there, without having those resources and having those men in place, men and women in place, I don't know that I'm able to make it through the Iowa program. So who, you mentioned those names, who would you say is or was that mentor for you that, that you know, that you leaned on back then or even still know today that you came in contact with? Doesn't necessarily have to do with football, but, you know, you mentioned those names, man. I think back on Marvin Sims and the man that he was and how that relationship, man, especially for me, a guy from all the way down in South Florida who really dealt with some struggles as pertains to, you know, being away from fam for the first time. And, you know, that first semester, man, I struggled. So having a guy like Marvin, guys like Fred, Bill Ennis Inge, a part of the program, you know, and like you mentioned, Coach Aiken and Coach Jackson being right there in the football offices, being resources there every single day. Who would you say was a mentor for you in your development at Iowa?
It was Coach Jackson, man. You know, because I had got in a few fights, man, early on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Coach Jackson was like, look, man, hey, you ain't back in the Detroit area, bro. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, he said it with like some, you know, he said that smooth, you know? Uh-huh. You know, Coach Jackson would have a little fire behind him, you know? And he would talk to me in a father figurely way because you got to understand, man, people think just because you might have a father at home, if your father didn't play sports or something like that, they didn't understand what you was going through. That stuff was over their head. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Even your parents, that was over their head. So they didn't understand the social issues or, you know, just the social struggles or the physical struggles or the balance struggles of being an athlete, which you know, which you would be going through. But just having Coach Jackson there, man, he stayed on me, man. He stayed on me. It was a few times, man. I remember I would go to Coach Fans if I missed some class or something or some type of stuff. And, you know, Coach Jackson would say something slick to me, like, oh, so you're going to go to Coach Fans to save you. But if it was in Coach Fans Jackson, then, oh, you know, the final decision came to Coach Jackson. Oh, he was going to make sure I fit the punishment. You know what I'm saying? And he stayed on me, man. You might not have noticed because you had Coach Aiken stayed on y'all even before practice, before, you know, y'all officially practice started. Mm-hmm. Coach Aiken was out there having y'all in them drills,
So
you probably didn't understand, like, that father tough fitness mentor role that I was going through with Coach Jackson.
Mm, yeah.
He didn't play that, man. Coach Jackson didn't play it at all. Even if I had an issue, you know, just the soft subject of the racial issues that's going on now, man. People don't understand Coach Aiken and Coach Jackson. We would have went to them with some issues like that, man. They had that resolved behind the scenes for us.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Real talk.
Absolutely.
So people don't understand the importance of some of them assistant coaches or some of the support staff like a Marvin Sims or a Fred Mims. They don't understand that, man. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting take that you have right there, because it does speak to what kind of respect, what kind of how that staff views those position coaches. Because I would agree with you. I agree with you 1,000% when it comes to Ron Aiken and Carl Jackson and what their roles were for us as players at that time in that program. And I would also say, Fred, in all honesty, Ron Aiken was probably one of the three reasons as to why I even came to Iowa. Being able to have a black position coach for me was of the utmost importance, you know, and that was available for me in other places. But just the man and the integrity that I sensed with Ron Aiken really made me feel like he was going to be go to bat for me regardless of any situation. And that was a part of the whole ability for me to come up there from South Florida in the first place was Ron Aiken and him and just the man that he was and just the comfort that myself and my family felt dealing with him. And I agree with you, man. Those guys hold so much rank when it comes to having that voice in that those position meetings and those team meetings and, you know, those coaches meetings. And I think, you know, as time goes on and those guys kind of end and go off in other places, things kind of change. However, so unfortunately,
yeah, because you know we dealt with Coach Doyle on a daily. Probably seen Coach Doyle more than we seen our strength coach. You know, just the strength staff more than.
Oh, no question.
You know, any other coaches. You know, but you know, like I say, if we had some uncomfortability ways, we had them strong position coaches to go to, man.
Exactly, and I don't know what happened over the years, but things changed on whatever level they changed on. And, you know, it's unfortunate that things have gotten to that point that they did. But what's most important is that the student athletes that are a part of the program feel safe and feel heard and feel like the staff is there for them and there to support them in whatever ways they need. And so got to move through and move on. And ultimately, man, I have to say that ultimately – I'm thankful for the relationships that I've been able to have with all these men all these years. It's unfortunate that things happen, that cause a situation to happen. However, we all got to be accountable for what our actions are, and nobody can abuse their power. And that, at the end of the day, is what has to be looked at overall and the good of the program overall. So That's pretty much all I have to say about it.
That's a different feel, man. I sit there and I heard all that because I understand each kid had different feelings over, you know, over the 20-year span or whatnot since we left there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it was like, damn, why I didn't have that feeling? I said, you know what? Coach Jackson and Coach Aiken and Fred Mims and Marvin Sims, hey, we went to them with a problem. It was going to be touched up and addressed in a certain type of way where we felt comfortable.
I agree. I agree. And those resources have over the years diminished, but I know that the university they have renewed their interest in changing the environment. And I can say that wholeheartedly, right, that I know that they're making some changes and changes to come for the better, to kind of move and usher the program into a new era. And I'm glad to be a part of it in the ways that I am, but even more so glad to see that, Coach Ferentz and, upper management as well as the athletic department have looked at the totality of these last few months into this year and not, taking a back seat, waiting to see what happens. They're taking a proactive move to try and make them changes now to better things so that we don't lose more student athletes or have anything like this happen again. So the program is heading in a positive direction, head by head coach Kirk Ferentz right now. And I'm excited to see how progress continues to happen.
Right. Because, we'd be in the locker room, we may be at training table, but, when Coach Jackson and Coach Aiken came around, we sure changed our mentality a little bit.
No question. Hey, like you said, like that father figure
coming
in. I don't
understand how we turned it on and off, we'd be in the locker room joking and stuff, and I see y'all get on the field, and practice haven't even started, but y'all might be sitting around talking to Coach Aiken to grab y'all before practice.
There ain't no sitting around talking and clowning. Nah, we got work to do. We're gonna get this work in right quick.
I'm like, dang, what happened to the big C that was just joking with me in the locker room?
I'm gonna joke with you after practice, but right now, Ron Aiken got a hold of me. It's time to put this work in. That's what I'm gonna do. Yeah, man.
But right.
That's what made us the better players that we are, man, between those coaches. That whole staff, really. I mean, we had no idea, bro. I mean, think about it. When you came in 2000 and myself in 99, man, we had no idea, especially after that 99 season and how the season went and just not feeling. Like, I still remember back on that 1999 season against that opening game against Nebraska and just feeling like, If this is what college football is about, I don't know. Well, those boys was big, strong. Now, mind you, they was number one in the country, and they was top 10 in the country, and that team would go on to win a national championship within the next 2 years. But at the time, I was like, man, what are we doing here? And, after going through that season and the difficulties of that season, that coaching staff, honestly, to see them stick it out and to see the group of guys that we fielded on the field, and the different players that came into the program to kind of help bolster the program, man, I just could kind of see things changing and how things were changing for the better. And being a part of that growth process really, really was helpful, man. And seeing young players and guys come in that really wanted to help make a change and were able to step in and do so, man, like yourself. I guess that's another thing I got to ask you, man. Who do you remember that came through that program that was a key fixture of helping to change that program, in your opinion?
As far as when I was there, we didn't have much change when I was there. We didn't have much change. Like I say, man, I was such in a daily dogfight as far as in the running back room, just replacing Liddell, man. I didn't have much time to really just focus on what others was doing. I just had Coach Jackson on my head, making sure I went to class daily, made sure I did all the little small details ready as a running back, as a student athlete. Coach Doyle, pushed the best up out of us. And I just had to get focused, man. And I didn't, like I say, with Coach Jackson being there, man, I didn't really get to watch too much of nothing else of what was going on, man, because I got this running back behind me squatting 500 pounds, vertical to 44.
Yeah.
So, I was just in the, being an undersized running back too, man. I was just in a tough fight, man. Like I said, it was times I felt, rode off the first 2 years, It was time. I just had to have a talk with my mom, and she got me right, man. And, just with Coach Jackson riding me, making sure I stayed within the position, within the system, and trusting in the system and what the coaching staff put in front of us. It was just that was just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They say the saying goes, pressure builds diamonds, pressure bursts pipes. Pressure bursts pipes, right. Pressure builds diamonds. So that was a high pressure situation. And
yeah, because you got to understand, like, I was a 4-year starter in high school. I never knew what junior varsity was in track, you know, football, you know, I qualified for states in track. And as a freshman in high school, stepped in as a freshman in high school. So, you know, me adjusting as a backup, that was something tough for me. You know, I understood going into it, it was going to be that way with Liddell being established there. It was just like, all right, you know, once he leave, well, you know, well, more than likely, I'm just going to, you know, step in and be the starter. But it was more than just being on the field. Mm-hmm. I had to carry myself a certain way off the field, too. Mm-hmm. Certain way, you know, I had to, you know, take care of my body. Certain way of presenting myself off the field, making sure I didn't fall in the pits of getting in trouble at the pad mall or getting behind in my grades for my teammates or the coaching staff didn't trust in me.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I wasn't the best student, but I graduated. And, I hustled through that, too, you know, and stayed focused on that and tried to do all of the details what the athletic department had for the athletic department had for as far as Sue Walker, John Allen and Hope. Mm-hmm. You know, they made sure they helped us athletes out that, you know, came from certain educational backgrounds that wasn't the best to get you on a certain level at a major university.
Yeah. Yep. I remember all those names and those folks, and I was able to graduate myself, and yeah, without those people, I know that it would have been even more difficult a task, man. So hats off to all that, man, and being able to get that degree and, you know, get that opportunity and fulfill that dream, you know, and, you know, be that shining light of our parents.
Yeah, the academic staff, man, was real good there, man. They pushed us, man. They pushed us. The academic staff we had there, man.
Yep.
They helped us a lot. You know, we had to give credit to them too, also. You know,
no question. And that was
they helped us out a lot.
Biggest part of it, man, was being that student and being able to juggle all those things. We wanted to be able to be on that field. We wanted to be able to enjoy those, you know, everything that came along with being a Hawkeye ball player, but the academics and having to dedicate ourselves and dedicate yourself to reach the highest level of standard to be that, man, as tough as it is, we did have a lot of good support throughout that time, man. And yeah, I was able to get that piece of paper, man, finished with that. And that's what's most important. You know, you walk out.
You know, coming in, man, let's be real. We was PlayStation, Nintendo kids, Sega kids. Like I say, I came in knowing how to play Madden. By the time I started learning how to play Madden again, probably like my junior, senior year where I was back balanced. Mm-hmm. I knew, you know, how to balance everything. Yep. I didn't know how to play that stuff no more. Y'all wasn't playing Madden with y'all. You know? Something had to give. You get what I'm saying? Something had to give, man.
Well, you had to focus yourself. No question. I mean, if you didn't have that time, that disposable time, man, you got to focus your time where it needs to be. And between them books and that open competition, that work at that, you know, working on that football, those were the things that were most important. So, I get it, bro. I get it. So
going home. If you didn't have that support, the training at home, you had to stay in Iowa City.
Yeah.
You know, you had to make that decision. I wanted to go back to see my high school childhood friends. I couldn't go back, man. I had to stay in Iowa City because I had some hard running backs around me, man. We was pushing each other.
Mm. And that push helped you to excel and become the best player that you could possibly be. Iron sharpens iron.
I did my best.
Iron sharpens iron. That's what they say. Iron sharpens iron.
Right.
All right. So I'm going to switch gears. I know you wanted to talk about this. Our former teammate, Fred Barr, a guy that I've known for a number of years, 20-plus years, guy you've known for 20-plus years, is currently dealing with something pretty serious. His diagnosis is trigeminal neuralgia. That's better. Trigeminal neuralgia is a chronic pain condition that affects the trigeminal nerve, which carries sensation from the face to your brain. If you have trigeminal neuralgia, even mild stimulation of your face is painful. So I had an opportunity to talk to Fred and have talked to him a couple times over the last few weeks, and he's in great spirits, but this is a pretty serious diagnosis. He's been dealing with these symptoms for a while and has been not forthcoming with his family and those close to him about dealing with him, and so now he's in this position. But I'm going to let you talk about it. I know you wanted to talk about this.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I wanted to dedicate this interview to him. It's this GoFundMe page. It's under, you can go to his girlfriend's page, Jessica Ann. I just looked at it today. It's 6,500 to 3,500 away from his goal. People don't understand us as athletes. We don't like to humbly, you know, ask for help as strong ex-athletes or athletes that's in us, that's we did majority of our life. Fred is dear to me because I wouldn't have been at Iowa City if it wasn't for Fred Barr. We had the same name. It was Big Fred. I was Little Fred. I just had that brotherhood with him, man. I was able to see him a few years after Iowa City. He had some job obligations in Michigan, and we met up. And we always going to have that brotherly bond, even with you. Just once you, you know, we people don't understand the psychological thing. We seen each other. We take showers next to each other, man. Let's just be real. You know what I'm saying? We just got that brotherly, you know, that brotherly. We might not even take showers next to our own brothers, blood brothers or cousins and stuff like that. But that's how close we are as young adults from our 18 to 23 age, let me going into this world as young adults.
Yep.
We always going to have that brotherhood, man. And if anybody that's listening to this, that's Hawkeye fans and find a dear to their heart to help my man Fred Barr reach his goals, man.
Absolutely. And I'll just add to that, man, that you're right. We are brothers for life, Hawkeye brothers for life. All of us that have come through the program, no matter if you were there for a year or a four-year starter or a walk-on that was more so on the practice squad side, or, you know, whoever you are a part of this brotherhood as long as you play with us. And you know, you bled, sweat, all that stuff, you know, in the name of what we were all about. So I know that's what connects us, you know. And yes, if you have the ability to, definitely go find the GoFundMe page. It's under Frederick Barr. And he's like Fred is saying, he's up to 6,500 trying to reach his goal, and we're going to all do what we can to help support him in that regard, as well as just keeping him in your prayers. You know, if you're friends with him on social media, dropping him a line, if you're thinking about him, those types of things are what's most important for all of us in this world, because we all need support in some way at some point. And so with that, I think I'm going to go ahead and end this interview. My friend Fred Russell, you are off the hot seat, my friend. Thank you for joining the show, Legends of Kinnick. It's been a pleasure and honor having you on the show today, man. Man, you've been amazing, man. Thank you.
I humbly appreciate the opportunity, man. I'm proud of the man you became, this app you came up with, this iPod. I mean, this podcast you came up with, man. I wish nothing but the best for you and your wife, your family, your kids, man, and your family back in Fort Lauderdale. I miss you, big bro.
Yeah, I appreciate that, brother. I miss you as well, man, and I appreciate all those kind words, man. The biggest thing about it is that, you know, we have a voice to talk about our experiences, you know, because a lot of us from the outside looking in see Fred Russell. Yes, even though shorter in stature, man, you was a ball of fire on that field, you know, and nobody really understands what it takes to put that out on the field. You know, don't understand the struggles and the work and the sacrifice. I mean, to have to sacrifice your entire summer to not have that time with your family and and those folks close to you, to dedicate yourself to what you're passionate about, man, just really speaks volumes about the man that you are, who you've been, and who you will be in the future, man. And everything, you know, I give all the, the I, hope all the success for you, my brother, in the future. And thank you again for joining me, man. I really do. And with that, brother, I got to say, go Hawks.
Go Hawks, man.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of Legends of Kinnick. You can stream or download the show on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, among others. I'm Colin Cole. Go follow Legends of Kinnick on all social media platforms. Take care and go Hawks.